We are wrapping up Mother's Day and MSU graduation weekend. How are you doing, Gallatin Valley and online listeners? You are tuned to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM Bozeman Community Radio 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm your host, Roxana. And today we're hearing about some solved things and some unsolved things. And in the second half of the show today, we have an interview with Glow from Wild Montana. Right now, here is today's Desert Oracle Radio episode from Ken Lane on May 11th, 2018. We offer Strange Circles and Mysterious Tracks.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Well, night has fallen on the Mojave, and it's nighttime all across the American desert. And that is sure a relief. This week, it got hot and it got hot fast. Hope you enjoyed spring. I hope you got outside and did something. I managed to get up to the Eastern Sierra for those last cool days, up around one of the best places, and I won't say exactly where because I sure like how I never see any other people out there. Once you're past that last little town with the White Mountains rising up alongside Highway 6, well, then it's just a few minutes to Nevada, and then you're on the road to Tonopah, the road to Great Basin National Park, or up to the Ruby Mountains, out to Wendover. Every direction is good out there. Go down to Lincoln County if you like. Go at night and watch the skies. Stop for a beer and a grilled cheese at the Little Ale Inn in Rachel. But if you go just 6 miles up from the California-Nevada state line, you'll come across a place that looks very weird from above. Very weird when photographed by satellite. Rafael Mazur posted a couple of pictures on the internet, on Twitter, if you want to get specific about it. Pictures that show hundreds of circles along the Bajada, the big alluvial wash coming down from Sugarloaf Peak, from the White Mountains. All those alluvial streams meshing into the alluvial plain, the alluvial fan. And that's a great word to throw around when you're talking to biologists or park rangers. Throw in a bird name or two, and they might even let you in to their secret club. Now, alluvium is just the rocks and the gravel and whatever else washes down from the mountains. Lots of it silt and a little soil and sometimes chunks of gold and silver. Sometimes even gemstones, depending on the part of the world you're in. Sometimes you can just pick the gold up off the ground. Well, that's what placer mining is all about, collecting silver and gold and gemstones from alluvial plains, from alluvial deposits along creeks and rivers, and the dry washes and bajadas of the deserts. But most alluvial fans are not covered in hundreds of barren circles of 15 feet across, maybe 20 feet. I mean, it looks like you could park a couple of cars on an average-sized mystery circle out there. And for scale, there's a house or two nearby with the usual desert collection of assorted vehicles. in assorted states of disrepair. If you want to see these big weird circles for yourself, find where US 6 crosses the state line due east from Mono Lake, an hour's drive or so away. And now look 6 miles northeast of the state line. At the base of the White Mountains, now Highway 6 runs right through the low part of this bajada, and you should be able to see these circles off the side of the road. In fact, it's right there where Highway 6 has these weird extra lanes on either side. I can't remember what it's for. Maybe it's a way station or something, a place for truckers to sleep. Look on Street View and you'll see a big weird thing parked there alone, too. It looks like something you'd use to bore underground tunnels connecting secret military bases. Or you can just look at our website, desertoracle.com, and just click up top where it says Desert Oracle Radio. I collected some pictures in the various Twitter posts from a bunch of desert biologists and environmental professionals. What do you think these pictures show? What do you think they are? Now, our friend Patrick Donnelly with the Center for Biological Diversity in Nevada, he spread the word around the various desert rats on Twitter. Anybody involved in public work is on Twitter because they have to be, despite the indignities and disgraces of the format. Plus, it gets lonely out there now and then. It's beautiful and it's wonderful, but now and then you want to jabber to your far-flung pals working on various desert restoration projects across the Southwest. The people who monitor the desert springs, who count the tortoises, who put up with a lot of nonsense, but who get the luxury of days spent outside, hours on the open road. Time to think it all over. And so the theories about the mystery circles were coming fast. Somebody said they're man-made, and then some wiseacre said it must be a vocational school for well diggers and a hydrogeologist called Erica Capybarica, if that is her real name, said she wanted to believe there really was a well diggers vocational school on the side of Highway 6. I want to believe, just like what's his name, the weird FBI agent. Now, Taylor McKinnon, also from the Center for Biological Diversity, said, well, they look like these harvester ant circles that have been noticed in satellite images of other desert bajadas. Red harvester ant hills, about 4 feet wide, surrounded by 100-square-foot circles cleared of all vegetation, like little bulldozers clearing the wild desert for a subdivision or a casino. And that was pretty convincing, but of course somebody has to go out there and make sure. Somebody has to do the science. So the scientist, Marianne Denton, who works in aquatic ecology, among many other things, did an emergency field science visit as she was already going to be in the area for other scientific work, just to make sure. Now, this dirt road goes up to the trailhead for Sugarloaf Peak eventually. It's mostly public land, Inyo National Forest, but there's also a house or two up there. And those few structures are surrounded by giant ant nests, hundreds of them. That was the theory. And now it has been confirmed. Two of the circles were examined and found to have ant hills in the middle. Ants do a lot of work in the desert. Ants do the work of worms out here because worms are few in the desert. We don't have that kind of soil. That kind of wormy soil most of the time. Not a lot of organic material. So what can be found on the sandy ground is collected and carried underground by the harvester ants. They collect the seeds and they have great storehouses underground. This is the food for the nest, for all the little ants, for the queen, of course, the lazy queen. And these big underground nests can be connected to huge colonies. The ants make the tunnels and the tubes beneath the desert sand, beneath the desert crust. They're the cause of these hundreds of mysterious circles. A huge ant colony may be 2 miles long. And oh, the sting of a harvester ant just hurts like hell. Anyway, I'm going to get up there again soon myself. Going to visit Ant City. Or whatever it is. See Ant City. There are many clues on the ground in open desert. Many things are right out in the open. Up in Hawthorne, Nevada is the Navy's undersea warfare base. And the only water around is Walker Lake. Probably not too many submarine battles there. But there are networks of strange patterns all around the base. You can see that from the satellite pictures. Bunkers covered in desert sand and whatever plants take up residence. There's some kind of crazy antenna farm there. Some people say it's buried. Some people say submarines go through an underground waterway that opens up somewhere around Malibu, of all places. And then these submarines somehow show up in northern Nevada, way up in the Great Basin Desert. Any place you're not welcome, like a military base in the desert, is always full of mysteries. Maybe not so mysterious to the people who work a 40-hour week behind the base gates. Because nothing stays mysterious for too long. Not if you are required to be there every work day. Even Jesus Christ got tired of it all. Even the Buddha. You read about those guys talking to their disciples, and it sounds a whole lot like trying to get through to somebody on the customer service line. Make a human connection. Try to solve the problem. You don't want to yell, you don't want to be a jerk, but even the people who are on your side are often too dense to be of much help. Back in 2011, people went kind of nutty about all these weird structures picked up by satellites on the deserts of China, including one huge thing that's an 18-mile-long rectangular frame of wide straight lines divided up into triangles and such. You can probably see it pretty well from the moon. There's the Atacama Giant, and over by Blythe, there are those giant figures cut into the desert crust. And in the deserts of the Middle East, all sorts of mysterious gates and circles have been cataloged. Monuments to something, giant triangles carved into the deserts of Saudi Arabia, of unknown purpose, studied by archaeologists of our time. There are triangles pecked into the ground of the Mojave, too. You'll see them on the trails above the Mojave River near Afton Canyon. Black triangles on the ground. Ancient things. Let's open up the Desert Oracle mailbag. I appreciate all your letters, electronic and otherwise. Most of your letters, anyway. Some people get put into the mark is read and skip inbox and delete forever category, unfortunately. there is some parable regarding customers. 5% of your customers make 95% of your problems. I can't remember exactly, but I agree with the sentiment. It applies pretty much anywhere in life. It's like that old Bob Dylan lyric about wishing that, for just one time, you could stand inside my shoes, because then you'd know what a drag it is to see you. I had to put Bob Dylan in the spam and delete forever category, in fact, unfortunately. I mean, it's not Bob Dylan, it's his marketing staff. But I had a busy week and there was all this garbage in the inbox, and among these unwanted communications was an email announcing Bob Dylan's brand of mail order whiskey. Come on now. Let's have a little dignity in the final stretch. All right, here's one I set aside to read tonight. It is from Stephanie Johnson. She writes, "Dear Desert Oracle Radio, my husband and I are huge fans, and it's our first wedding anniversary this week. We got married in Palm Springs last year at the Parker. The desert is really our special place. I wanted to see if it would be possible to maybe give a shout out to surprise my husband, Darren. He recently wrote in and you read his letter for the Desert Oracle mailbag. He was super stoked. Thanks a bunch, and we always look forward to every Friday. All my best, Stephanie." Well, Stephanie, thanks for the good note, and congratulations on staying married a whole year. That's pretty good these days. It sounds like you had a real nice wedding down there in Palm Springs. And if you have a real fun wedding, a real blowout, the kind of wedding where people get so loaded and are having so much fun being around all their friends, who all look great for once. Well, in the weeks and months to come, you will hear fantastic tales of weird antics, hotel keys passed around like business cards, divorce people getting back together again, you know what I'm talking about. People making life decisions. Well, and then the newlyweds have to go back to regular life after all that. Back home to some substandard apartment or shack, the indignity of wage labor, the debt racket. Just a terrible shock of it all. So congratulations, and I'd be glad to give you a shout out, but we have a strict rule here. One mailbag appearance per household per year. I'm sorry to have to tell you this. But I hope you have a good second year of marriage, and I hope you both get to spend more time in the desert. We had a rare rainstorm a week or so back. I even got hail down at the office in Joshua Tree. And when you get rain in the desert, it's a fantastic thing, because all the tracks on the dirt roads vanish. All the tire tracks and the bicycle tracks, and on the trails, all the animal tracks vanish. It's all clean and fresh again. Well, it was between two short periods of rain, one in the early morning hours and one in the afternoon, I think. And we've got Tanine Allison on the line. Tanine was taking a midday walk, the kind of thing you usually don't do this time of year because it's already too hot out, but it was nice and cool between the rains with the cloud cover. So she took some pictures, and These pictures will be on our website. Take a look after the program if you remember. It's a pretty strange thing, and that's really the kind of thing we like quite a lot out here. We have Tanine Allison from Joshua Tree on the line. She recently sent a strange series of photographs to people around town up here.
It was last week on one of the about 2 days of spring that we actually have in the desert. So one of the days that it was raining in the 60s, which is unusual right now. And I went on a midday hike to try to get out and catch some of the rain, and noticed while on the hike, right outside of Joshua Tree, in between the town and the park, these unusual tracks along the way that went down the main kind of dirt road in the area on for a while. And there were these three quad tracks that were not, I couldn't identify what they were. And so I took photos and sent it around to people expecting that somebody would just reply with an obvious answer that I didn't know. But it turned out that nobody in town, the numerous people I know who know about desert things, really had any sort of clear answer.
So they're not roadrunner tracks or quail tracks or that type of thing. How big would you say these were?
I have a decently large dog, 70-pound wolf-looking dog, and they were twice the size of his track. Most of it claw of the track.
And from claw to heel, it looks like, what, about 4 inches, you estimated?
I would guess about that.
Now, this road is usually covered in mountain bike tracks and footprints and various animal tracks, but on this occasion, rare enough in the desert, it was not, and that's because...
So it rained in the morning, and I was out there around 1 or 2, and it rained right before I left. So rare day where that road, you could see the tracks, and it had kind of cleared the earlier tracks, and it looks like whatever this thing was walked down the road between the morning rain and when I was there in the afternoon rain. And it was notable, even my dog doesn't stay on the road, so it was notable that this thing had just kind of stayed on the straight track down the road, down the dirt road.
Now, you circulated these photographs to people around town, and you told me they made their way to some park rangers at the Desert National Park here. What did they come up with? What were their ideas?
Well, I didn't talk to the rangers, but a friend of mine did. And the first guest, there's a gathering of rangers that happened to be that night. And so a friend of mine showed them to the rangers at this gathering, and they jokingly suggested crocodile because they didn't know what it was. And it does, in fact, if you actually look up crocodile tracks, it does not look dissimilar from this. So the gathering of rangers really couldn't guess what this could be. And the same friend then later reached out to a park biologist whose best guess was that it was a badger and that the tracks only captured some of the claws, because there's just like 3 clear claws and most of these badgers have more. And so that was the best guess anybody could come up with, is that it was some sort of large badger, which is rare out here, but apparently there was one Black Rock last year, so occasionally it happens. But that was the best guess. Everybody else kind of, anybody guessing real animals, lots of chupacabra guesses. Some people guess raccoon, but I can't find anything that would show raccoon paws this large and with claws like this. So badger was the best guess from the park biologist.
Badger, Black Rock. Black Rock Canyon is the highest elevation campground of the national park, and that's 1,200, 1,400 feet higher in elevation than Joshua Tree, where these prints were seen. Did the biologist mention anything about the altitude discrepancy between Joshua Tree, this valley being a good 1,200 feet lower in elevation than Black Rock Canyon, where badgers have occasionally been seen?
Not to my knowledge. But again, I'm not sure whether my friend emailed or texted the biologist. I'm not sure what. It's, again, a phone tree in the desert, right? I just got word back that the biologist said, well, it looked most likely to be a badger and asked where it was. But I don't. It wasn't a thorough exchange about elevations and landscape. You know, I think most people grasp for what is known. So again, I get a lot of skunks. Everybody wanted to kind of jump on the badger possibility. Chupacabra is the one that came up most often as far as a theory that's not explained by a biology book. I think it kind of comes back to whether people want to believe that there's things that are unknown or not. And most people want to know what it is and want to believe it's a thing that we know. But the vast majority of people just said, I have no idea. I grew up in the Mojave Desert, right? So on the west side, where Yucca Man took different forms in how he was seen. And it was one of those people who grew up, you know, a kid with, like, my childhood fort was a creosote bush. One of the things I realized, too, kind of thinking through this, is, like, this was an unknown thing that I saw. But as a desert-raised person, the line between what's unknown and what's known is almost non-existent. Like, you almost don't categorize, is this some animal that I could point to in a book versus is this some unknown thing in the desert? Because it's so common that things in the desert don't make sense.
From Amboy to Zizix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio. We broadcast to you from KCDZ 107.7 FM in Joshua Tree in the High Desert each Friday night at 10 p.m. and everywhere all the time with your favorite podcast player. Take a look at our website, desertoracle.com, for information on all such things, including the musical tracks you hear by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. And this broadcast is brought to you by Desert Oracle, the pocket-sized field guide to the strange and mysterious American desert. We are pretty happy with book number 7, and even happier that so much progress has already been made on Desert Oracle number 8, coming to you late this summer. And weirdly enough, book 9 is more or less worked out, just have to type it up. You can order a subscription or back issues of Desert Oracle at our website, or mail a check or money order for $25 to Desert Oracle, P.O. Box 1735 in Joshua Tree. I'll send you 4 of these little yellow desert guides as I get them made and published. And remember that number 8 is our special issue marking the 50th anniversary of Edward Abbey's Desert Solitaire, which we're doing with the help of our friends at Back of Beyond Books in beautiful Moab, Utah. You can go to Desert Solitaire 50, that's the number 50, desertsolitaire50.com. Leave your thoughts and memories of Desert Solitaire, a book that changed a lot of people's lives and in important ways changed how wild desert is appreciated by our society, by us. And if you write something really pretty, it might even show up in our Abbey issue. Don't forget your hat out there. Don't follow GPS directions down a washed out road. And good night from the voice of the desert.
You know, I like to record these shows where I can hear some nature sounds. And today I was in Bozeman, and so I thought, oh, I'll go over to that cemetery near Lindley Park. And as you can hear, there are a lot of motor noises. So I guess daytime is not the quietest time for those that have passed on. And I hope they don't mind. Well, anyway, it's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgvm.org. That episode you just heard mentioned some magnificent little engineers, harvester ants. Some of our nature readings today are also about tiny engineers. We have a couple readings from Nature, One Day at a Time, by Kathy Katz. And she opens the reading on May 10th with this. From Julia Cameron in Blessings. In its perfect pink blossoming, the bloom of the apple tree does not concern itself with whether a bee will appear. The blossom does its job just by blossoming. The bee is drawn to do the rest. Apple trees grow over more parts of the earth than any other fruit tree. Even though they grow abundantly all over North America, they aren't actually native trees. Early European settlers brought apple trees to the states from Europe in the 1600s. Apple trees are one of the first to bloom in the spring and one of the most aromatic, attracting thousands of bees to the pale pink flowers for the nectar. As the bees fly off, they carry pollen from that tree to the next tree they visit. And then she closes with a quote from Richard Dawkins in Climbing Mount Improbable. And the quote goes like this. Flowers, the bees might say, are there to provide us bees with pollen and nectar. And then Richard Dawkins observes, even the bees haven't got it quite right, but they are a lot more right than we humans are if we think that flowers are there for our benefit. We might even say that flowers, at least the bright and showy ones, are bright and showy because they have been cultivated by bees, butterflies, hummingbirds, and other pollinators. And her entry for May 11th goes like this. Up to an inch long, carpenter ants are larger than most of the common North American ants. They typically live in dead wood, trees, houses, or under soil, burrowing in chambers made by excavating wood, but not eating it as termites do. The nests are orderly and well constructed, housing battalions who provide regurgitated food for their queen. Like most ant colonies, workers and soldiers are part of the ant caste, but are wingless because they have no need to fly. Males and fertile females who need to leave the nest to mate are the only members with wings. As in other ant species, carpenters have a complex communication system of chemicals that describe news of the day. Cockroach approaching, juicy wounded caterpillar behind rock, fire ants closing in from the south. And then she closes with a quote. Oh, and this is from one of my favorite people and someone else. It's from Edward O. Wilson and Bert Holdubler in Journey of the Ants. And they said, ants, like humans, to put it in a nutshell, succeed because they talk so well. Ha ha. And by the way, speaking of queen ants or bees or whatever, I do disagree with Ken Lane. They are not lazy. They are simply doing their job. Now, Henry David Thoreau, in the book Observations on the Days of the Year, edited by Steve Grant, for May 10th, 1854, Thoreau wrote, in Boston yesterday, an ornithologist said significantly, quote, if you held the bird in your hand, unquote. But I would rather hold it in my affections. And then on May 11th, 1853, he wrote, how many little birds of the warbler family are busy now about the opening buds while I sit by the spring. They are almost as much a part of the tree as its blossoms and leaves. they come and give it voice. I like that one. I hope you do too. Well, is anybody out there a fan of John Milton, you know, from the 1600s? He wrote, "In those vernal seasons of the year, when the air is calm and pleasant, it were an injury and sullenness against nature not to go out and see her riches and partake in her rejoicing with heaven and earth." So, on that subject of getting people out there in the wild places, as you might know, I like to get updates on what our local wilderness-loving nonprofits are doing. And this week, I had a nice visit with a member of one. We sat on a bench along the trail behind the Bozeman Library on a lovely day. I do apologize for the intrusion of one of the many jets that pass over the town. I think there's an airplane coming right now. Oh, my. And, well, machines, I guess, are a part of our life here. What are you going to do? Anyway, here we go. Can you please introduce yourself and who you're affiliated with and what your designation is in that group?
Hi, I'm Gloria Burgos, GLO, or to my friends. I am part of Wild Montana, which is an environmental organization that helps protect public lands. I am on the board of the Madison Gallatin chapter, and here being interviewed with Roxanne.
Yeah, good. It's good you know who I am. That's great. Okay, are there any events coming up that you'd like to tell us about?
Yes, we have tons of things going on.
Okay.
And the first thing I wanted to say is that Wild Montana has a wonderful website that everybody should visit and go to the events section, because we hold wilderness walks all over the state. And there are so many that it's best to just go online to wildmontana.org and look them up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about a couple that we're having in the Madison-Gallatin area. We have 7 chapters of Wild Montana, and each chapter has their own individual wilderness walks. But one of the biggest things that we have coming up is we are collaborating with Jack Creek Preserve, and we're having a wonderful overnight event. We're going to have many activities. We're going to have Abby King from the preserve itself posting a hike up to Fan Mountain, or you can choose to do a naturalist walk with Cedar Mather's Wynn. Later on in that day, we're going to have Matt Seidensticker, who, I hope I'm saying that right, sorry Matt if I'm wrong, he is a part of the Montana Moth Project. So later on in the day, after dinner, we're going to have a moth speaker.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Then later on that night, we're going to have Lynn Powers doing stargazing. Yeah, it's going to be an amazing event. It's an overnight. We'll provide dinner and breakfast, many activities, and it's really a great collaboration between us and the Jack Creek Preserve. I don't know if you've ever been to the Jack Creek Preserve, but it's on Jack Creek Road, which connects Ennis to Big Sky. And it's stunning.
I've heard so many good things about that place. I've never been out there myself, because isn't it kind of like kind of restricted as far as you can't just walk into it?
Correct. There is a gate. You get the code to the gate if you come.
Oh, nice.
And it's a private road.
Uh-huh.
But to get to Jackson Creek Preserve, you have to get through the gate, and that's all provided and everything. But yeah, it's absolutely stunning, and you're kind of on the backside of Lone Peak that you don't really. You're in an area that you don't have access to, so it's really stunning. It's a beautiful
nice
facility. You can camp. You can be in your van, your camper vans if you want. Mm-hmm. There's also housing for 14 people in the women's and 14 in the men if you want to bunk. Mm-hmm. It's really a nice spot. It's really a beautiful spot. And all our presenters are top-notch, incredible.
When is the date of that?
The date is July 18th and 19th. Yeah. And it's on our website. So sign up if you want to come.
Great. Is there any cost to this?
There is a cost. It's a $200 cost.
Uh-huh.
And again, that is going to cover, you know, housing and food and mm-hmm. your mm-hmm. presenters. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds so fun.
Yeah. And it's filling up. So, uh-huh. You know, we have room for, I think, 24 people. And so I don't know how many of that has been filled up yet. But mm-hmm. I know last time it was, we had like six. Mm. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else you wanted to tell us about?
Well, we are also, we just did at Earth Day, we had a table where we had kids become junior wilderness stewards. And we are going to have an open hike for families at Grotto Falls.
Mm-hmm.
That will be on June 6th. At Grotto Falls, where families can sign up, and we're going to teach the kids and the families all about Leave No Trace principles and to become invested in their beautiful, you know, public lands. And we'll do a scavenger hunt and maybe induct more junior wilderness ambassadors. And we're really excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
We're really excited about that. And then, again, we have a lot of wilderness walks coming up. The next really fun thing, which is a free event, is going to be Wild Montana. Madison Gallatin is going to present Heart of a Lion, which is a film, a documentary film by biologist Mark Elbrock. And it's all about mountain lions in the Jackson Hole area. And also the Olympic Peninsula. And that is going to be held at the library June 3rd. At doors open at 5:30. The movie starts right at 6. It's about 100 minutes, so no, you're going to be sitting more than a little bit more than an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an incredible documentary, absolutely free, first come, first served, and it will hopefully encourage you to become a fan of mountain lions more so than being afraid of them. I mean, it's good to be it's good to be aware, but
respect.
You will respect those
mm-hmm.
animals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really some of the events coming up. We always have our board meetings if anybody's interested to come to our board meetings at the Madison Gallatin chapter. It's held at Firehouse 7 in Bozeman. Mm-hmm. It's from 5 to 7,
mm-hmm.
third Tuesday of every month.
Firehouse 7, whereabouts is that?
That's on the west side. It's right by Dinosaur Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And all these activities that you have, which is so nice, what an amazing... Oh, yeah, and I was going to ask you, you mentioned the cost or the fee for the camping, the overnight thing.
Yeah.
Is there a fee for your wilderness hikes or or the event with the kids and the junior rangers?
Yes, no, there's no fees.
Great.
The only reason we have a fee this time is mm-hmm. because it's an overnight...
Yeah.
And it's lodging, and it's uh-huh. it's food and lodging,
uh-huh.
and multiple speakers. Uh-huh. But everything else we do is free.
Uh-huh. Okay, and you mentioned your wilderness walks or wilderness hikes.
Yes.
So, will there be on the website, is it already laid out?
It is.
What those are for our area?
Yes,
locally?
It is all laid out. If you go online, it is laid out. You can look for activities two ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's a map of Montana, mm-hmm. and the Madison-Gallatin area is on the map. It's designated. You can click on that, and then you can get into all of our events.
Okay.
If you go to Wild Montana events itself, just type that in, you'll get all of the events all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go more by date
mm-hmm.
to look for things. And then when you get to the event that you like, just click on it. You'll be brought to a waiver area where you mm-hmm. sign the waiver. And then you will be contacted by the person in charge of that event
mm-hmm.
and will let you know, how to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a winter event, we would say many layers and, food, snacks and water hiking poles or tracks.
Mm-hmm.
In the summer, we'll tell you, again, sunscreen and snacks and lots of water. So you will be... People will let you know what to expect from your event.
And for people that are carbon footprint conscious, is there opportunity for carpooling to get to the trailheads?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's all included in your email.
Good.
We try to carpool as much as possible. No charge. You just, sometimes groups...
Yeah.
Pitch in $5 or whatever. But so we carpool. Sure.
Love it.
Absolutely.
And why do your activities matter to our environment and our community and maybe even habitat health?
First of all, reaching out to the community and educating them is most important. If people don't know, they're not going to take care of their land and their environment. It's really great to spend time with people and let them know what Wild Montana is all about. It's important because we, people in Montana, love our lands. We love our mountains. We love our rivers. We love our prairies. We love Montana. And right now, there are serious attacks going on. There are things that the government wants to do to take away our public lands or things that will impact what's going on with our public lands. And it's more important than ever before that we reach out to the community and work with them to help them understand the importance of what it is we actually have here.
Thank you. And how can listeners learn more and maybe even support your group?
Well, again, you could go on wildmontana.org.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to go online. And you can become a member for $10. And that will get you updates on what's going on with political issues that are affecting public lands, like the roadless rule. You would get updates on all the events that are going on. You would be invited to events. And, just a general awareness of basically what Wild Montana does all the time. And, again, it's really easy. Just go to wildmontana.org. You don't have to become a member. You can just look around.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to become a member, it's only a $10 fee. And what that affords us, the more people that we have as members, that gives us more power
mm-hmm.
to influence our politicians.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
really something to think about right now.
Oh, indeed. And it sounds like a bargain, too.
Yeah. You can always give more.
Yes. And is there anything I didn't ask about that you'd like our listeners to know?
No, I think we're really excited about our movie, The Heart of the Lion. We're really excited about Jack Creek's Preserve.
Mm-hmm.
We're always excited about our wilderness walks. You know, we're always looking for volunteers. Very easy to do. Again, go on the website and, you know, poke around, and there's a volunteer get active thing up there mm-hmm. that you can click on. And, you know, we're always looking for volunteers and people to participate.
Excellent. And last, I always love to ask my people, like, would you like to share a meaningful personal experience that you've had in a wild place or while volunteering with Wild Montana?
Well, it's funny. When I first moved here about 8 years ago, of course, I was looking for stuff to do. Mm-hmm. And I looked up hikes in Montana, came upon Wild Montana, and I thought, ooh. And I signed up for a hike. It did get canceled, but that was okay. I thought this mm-hmm. that was a really great thing to have this hike where you learn about the history of the area. And then I ended up joining because I loved the bumper stickers, Keep It Wild. And then I happened to volunteer with somebody called Roxanne, my interviewee, my interviewer. And I worked on a wilderness steward project, and that was a wonderful experience because it was eye-opening. You know, how we hiked a trail, we cleaned up fire rings at the top, we talked to people. I thought it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And you know, again, it's really important to cherish and take care of what you love. And this is one of the ways that we can do it.
For sure. Well, thank you so much, Glo. And maybe I'll see you on one of these trails, one of these events.
I hope so, Roxanne.
I hope so,
thank you
too.
Very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Keep it wild.
Indeed. Well, now comes the part when we talk about how you can help our natural world. The Gallatin Watershed Council needs your help for the annual Gallatin Watershed Cleanup. So you can go to the GallatinWatershedCouncil.org and click on the Get Involved tab and go to events and go to May 16th to learn more and sign up. And I'll just give you how they describe it on their website. So you can volunteer from 10 in the morning to noon on that day to help clean up across the lower Gallatin watershed. And in addition to that, they also offer that you can sign up as a team leader or a team member. So you can make your choice on that. Team leaders attend a pre-event happy hour at Lockhorn Cider on May 14th at 6 p.m., to collect supplies and review safety information, and then rally their group at the cleanup site. Team members show up ready to roll up their sleeves on the day of the event. So you can help them clean up the watershed and prevent harmful waste from washing into our waterways. And so again, that annual Gallatin Watershed Cleanup is scheduled for Saturday, May 16th from 10 to noon, and then it'll be time to celebrate from 12:30 to 2:30 in the afternoon at Bozeman Pond. After the cleanup, you can join them for a celebration featuring cold drinks, tasty food, and great company, live music by West Dakota Stutter. Prizes and announcements kick off at 1 p.m., and you won't want to miss it. It is really a fun event. If you've never done it before, I highly recommend it. My thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver and to Ken Lane for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you to the cemetery and the residents of the cemetery for allowing me to record here. And I appreciate the volunteers, supporters, and underwriters that are the lifeblood of KGVM. By the way, happy 8th birthday, KGVM, on May 11th. And remember, if you want to contribute, you can send a donation to the station anytime at the KGVM.org website. There is a support us tab there to tell you how. By the way, do you have a favorite trail or stream? You can leave a text or voicemail for me at 406-404-6246. And you don't even have to name it. You can just tell me what you like about it if you like. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are archived for you on the kgvm.org website. So watch those skies, stay well, keep doing good things, and sweet dreams. I'll see you next week.